Picture this. Columbia University, New York, 1901. Alfred Kroeber, at 24, received the first PhD in anthropology, one of the first six granted in America. His dissertation was on decorative symbolism in Arapaho art. With a fixation on holism, history, and the importance of fieldwork as his philosophy, Kroeber set out on a quest to study people. He helped found the anthropology department at UC Berkeley. During his tenure, in an article still famous after almost 100 years, Kroeber described culture as superorganic. Human culture is more than atoms, more than molecules, more than life and living things, more than how things function, more than natural laws. Culture can only be understood in cultural terms, and culture is superorganic. You're listening to the Superorganic, aka the Super O Show, with Professors Mark Joshua Gordon and Alexis Altunian, where we find culture everywhere and in everything. So stay tuned right here on Lancer Radio Network, Pasadena Campus Sounds, at www.lancerradio.org. Hello, anthropologists and anthropological sympathizers. You are listening to the Super O Show with Professors Mark J. Gordon and Alexis Altunian, and I am super stoked. How are you feeling, Alexis?
I'm well, Mark. How are you? Good afternoon.
I just said I'm stoked. I still am. This is awesome. You know what we're going to do today?
What are we doing?
I think you do, because we talked about it.
This is our first show, our inaugural Super O Show. So thanks for being here with us, because today will be a great day of talking about anthropology. And we have a guest, a very special guest, who is not only our colleague, but a very important person to both Professor Gordon, Mark, and myself, because we're sitting here talking with you today because of her. An influential professor, Dr. Lauren Aronson, will be joining us. So
I'm so happy to have her here for a number of different reasons. First of all, I wish you could have heard what we were saying before we started the show. She is just a veritable cornucopia of anthropology and stuff of all kinds. She's exciting and amazing. And most importantly, I think I can say that this is true for me. I don't know about for you, but I became an anthropologist because of her. So she's a great, if not the perfect person to have as our first guest on the show.
I agree. And I am an anthropologist also because of Dr. Aronson.
Before we talk more about Dr. Aronson, which we're going to do, she's like the focus of our whole first episode here, let's talk a little bit about who we are. Who are you, Alexis?
Well, hi. I'm Professor Altunian, but you guys can call me Alexis. I've been teaching here at PCC for the past 7.5 years, going on 8. I started teaching here at PCC when I was 22, and it was Dr. Aronson and Dr. Finkenbinder that gave me my first big break. And since then, I've been teaching at a variety of colleges throughout Southern California. I'm still a freeway flyer, which means I'm an adjunct professor, and I've gotten to know so many great colleagues over the years, including Professor Gordon, who I've gotten the pleasure of getting to know over the past couple of years and starting this great endeavor.
You're too sweet. You're too kind.
Oh, well, it's true.
We've known each other probably since you started, because I've been here. I hate to date myself, in part because I think it's a group activity typically. It's something you should do with other people. But I have been – you missed that joke entirely. Date myself? Anyway, I thought it was great. I wish we had video. I've been here for 12 years. I just filled out a thing for change in rank. So I actually had to go and count all of my contracts, my manual, risograph, whatever contract. I think I've been here 12 years at PCC, taught a lot of different classes, every kind of class I taught, pace and fast-paced stuff and slow-paced stuff and everything. Little bit more about my background, and then I want to talk a little bit about yours and a little bit about Kroeber's. Kroeber, comparatively, is boring, but we need to talk about him because he is the basis for this show. He's not really boring, but he's not a good writer. Anyway, my background was first in biochem. I took Professor Aronson, who we'll talk to more later. I took her class my second quarter, as an undergrad at Cal State LA, and I decided, geez, Lucy is the bomb, proverbially speaking. Lucy, not Scarlett Johansson.
We should tell the listeners which Lucy you're referring to.
Which Lucy am I referring to?
The classic Lucy. In fact, we saw Lucy last year. We did.
Was that really her? For those of you, because we need to kind of explain what it is that we're talking about. I'm seeing a no off to the side. Lucy is a 3.5 to maybe 4 million year old set of bones found by Don Johansson.
Set
in the
of
70s.
Bones. Might we refer to her as a hominin?
She is first a hominid, and now they call her a hominin. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But in any event, was it the Bowers Museum?
Yes.
What museum was it? We went to see this ancient set of artifacts from on loan from Ethiopia, theoretically. They wouldn't let us get close enough to determine her true authenticity. They kept setting off alarms when we tried to see if it was really Lucy or a bone clone copy of Lucy.
I think Mark is a conspiracy theorist. I think it perhaps was the real Lucy, but it was incredible nonetheless. This tiny pelvis, tiny sacrum could fit in the palm of your hand. So to give you an idea of how petite, how gracile she was. But I could see how this would be your start. Something so symbolic of human origins. This is what turned you on to anthropology?
It did turn me on. In fact, I love my hominids gracile. In any event, let's digress a couple steps before we lose them. The reason that I brought up Lucy in the first place is that I took Professor Aronson's class where she talked about hominids, and hominin didn't even exist as a thing back in, again, I'm going to date myself, this was 1996. It was just so great. It combined humanity with social science, with physical and biological science in a way that I hadn't seen ever before. And I had taken all of the classes for pre-med as well. So I took the chemistry and the biology and all of that. And quite honestly, the most humanistic thing I ever saw in a chemistry lab was the little sign by the eyewash that shows you that if you get like hydrochloric acid in your eye, it showed a little person. And that was the closest connection to people that I ever saw in the hard sciences, whereas we were talking about people all day in anthropology. So I can't wait to talk to her in a few minutes. But I started as a physical anthropologist, and then I became a medical anthropologist in grad school. And I went and spent some time in different healthcare settings and translated between Spanish and English. People make fun of my accent all the time, but I did the best I could. And in any event, then I went to law school, which is even bloodier than med school, which I had been contemplating. And that's a little bit about my background. Tell us about your Fullerton and UCLA days.
Well, the nice thing I can really say about teaching at a community college is I can connect with my students because I, too, attended PCC. I found my best start here. I think I got my academic sea legs at a community college and was able to transfer to UCLA. I started off actually as a psychology major. And as a psychology major, I thought my career opportunities were boundless and that I would find my way onto an MFT or maybe a PsyD. But it was Dr. Aronson's course that really changed my perspective. And I too found that connection with the humanistic of sciences, which is anthropology.
You were going to be a therapist?
Yeah, I wanted to be an MFT or work in counseling services. But I realized this was a direction I wanted to go, anthropology.
You know, I don't mean to cut you off, if you think you made a mistake, you know, my mom's an MFT. And so if you want to change careers, I know, that might be a thing. I'm joking.
I could, but I'm pretty happy with what I do. I know that the time and effort to become an anthropologist of 4 years for an undergrad degree and 2 years from a master's isn't that much of a time constraint. But I think it is, to be honest, kind of a fun life choice because you see things differently through the lens of an anthropologist. And part of our show is that we think as anthropologists, we can find culture in everything and culture everywhere. And I'm so glad that I took that path and I diverged. So
let's you've told us a little bit about you. I've told us a little bit about me. And we know a little bit about Dr. Aronson. We're going to talk with her more in a few. What is anthropology? That's the only thing and maybe the most obvious thing that we haven't yet talked about. What is it? What does it mean to you?
Well, when I think of anthro and when I teach my students, I think of it as a four-field discipline. And that's sort of intimidating for students. They have no idea what these four fields are or what it means to have a discipline that has four fields. What I like to say to further that thought is that there is this incredible diversity that focuses on humans from a scientific perspective. So within our discipline, we're well known for having versatility, four different perspectives: physical or biological anthropology, cultural anthropology, archaeology, and linguistics. Most of the students will recognize immediately archaeology. They'll know that this is an area of interest or emphasis for them because media has played it this way. But I find that the four fields approach is probably the best place to start with the definition. How about you?
I know that some people, to add to that, even add a fifth subfield, which is applied anthropology, which is anything that is more than theory but actually practical. So when you go into the world and you work for industry or you work for a government, that's doing applied anthropology. The way I see anthropology, and maybe this is overly romantic, but I see it as kind of trying to parse all of the grains of sand on the beach. I see it as trying to explain all of the little tiny nuances that make people what they are, and it's really an impossible goal to do it well, I think. I tell my students, I actually poll them the beginning of each semester, and I ask them, how many of you are taking this class because someone told you that it's easy to get a good grade relatively easily, you're going to substitute this, let's say, for a science class if you take the lab. And, of course, you know, I get different responses every semester, and a couple people usually say, no, I want to be an anthropologist. But the point is, I tell them, look, if we do this right, if we're doing anthropology correctly, it's actually one of the hardest, not one of the easiest things to do.
I think that's a very eloquent way to put it. I do. And I know that we have, at this point in time, another great person we could ask about their perspective on anthropology.
Who might that be?
That would be our wonderful guest, Dr. Lauren Aronson.
You want to tell us a little bit about her?
Yes, the person that got us into this field. And so I'd like to give you a bit of her background, her bio. So Dr. Aronson has taught here for 15 years. She's been a member of faculty at Pasadena City College. She received her bachelor's from UC Santa Barbara and a master's from Cal State LA in anthropology and a PhD from USC in intercultural education. She's a valuable member of the campus community. She works with organizations like the VRC, Gibbons Conservation Center in Santa Clarita, and she's done amazing things both on this campus and off. And Dr. Aronson, I would love to bring you on and ask you, Mark has asked me what I think anthropology is. So what is anthropology to you, and how would you define it for our listeners?
To me, I would say humans are just one type of primate species, and I like to expand more than just humans. So I look at primates and their role within their environment. And to me, that's the easiest definition to start with.
I like that very, very much. So primates, for those of you that aren't familiar with this term, it's a very important term for us. It's a classification term, but includes humans and non-human primates. And gibbons, as I mentioned, are great examples of primates. And the Gibbon Conservation Center, where you've volunteered, really allow us to see humans, primates, non-human primates in their not natural environment, but interacting. And that must be really unique and really cool. So how long have you worked at the Gibbon Conservation Center?
I was on the board for roughly 8 years, and at that time I took a variety of different roles. For about a year and a half, I was the president of the board for the Gibbon Conservation Center.
And that's probably where your passion for primates and I bet your definition sort of came from. So
absolutely. I'm really fortunate. Not only have I had the pleasure of working with humans inside the classroom and outside, but I've also worked at the Los Angeles Zoo, at the Page Museum, and the Natural History Museum. So I've studied primates in a variety of different forms.
And for our students and for our listeners who would like to know more about the Gibbon Center, they have a great website. I think it's gibboncenter.org. They have a Facebook page and a Twitter.
Even better, we're having PCC weekend at Gibbon Conservation Center October 25th and 26th, a tour at 10 o'clock, and everybody is more than welcome to join us.
And Mark, any thoughts?
Have you ever been bit by a gibbon?
I actually have been bit by...
Did you need to get a tetanus shot?
No, I'm not really supposed to say this, but I'll explain. I was bit by a baby, and the baby had to be removed from her mom. The mom did not have enough milk. She was not producing enough milk, and she needed to be hand-raised. The infant bit my arm, and then they...
You know what? I got to stop you,
okay.
But I want to hear more
How
about
dramatic.
This.
It's very dramatic.
Super O Show, www.lancerradio.org.
Pasadena City College presents the second annual Million Meals Marathon Food Drive. Help the college reach their goal of 1 million meals. Donate non-perishable food items and pet food on Saturday, November 22nd and Sunday, November 23rd at 11 a.m. by dropping off your donations in Lot 1. Donations benefit the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank and the Pasadena Humane Society. For more information, please call 626-585-3378.
Looking for a great deal? Love finding that little something special? Come to Pasadena City College the first Sunday of every month for the best flea market in town. Voted Pasadena Weekly's Reader's Choice 3 years in a row, PCC's Flea Market has over 400 vendors and free admission. PCC Flea Market, the first Sunday of every month from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. For more information, go to www.pasadena.edu/flea market.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it. But he just throws it. Again. I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
Hello, you are back with the anthropologist here on the Super O Show, Pasadena Campus Sounds, www.lancerradio.org. And we are here today talking about what anthropology is, what the super organic means, and we're asking some of these questions, not just of ourselves, but also Professor and Dr. Lauren Aronson, one of our favorite professors. She's with us, and we have some questions for her. What would you like to know?
Well, Dr. Aronson did a great job at answering for us the question that we posed before break, and she left us with a dramatic cliffhanger. And so I would like to ask a little bit more about your experience with the gibbons. It's so important for anthropologists to do research and field work. This is really the cornerstone foundation of our discipline, and I know it's been a big part of your life. So I know it's a dramatic story. I'd like to hear more about that. I'm sure our listeners do too. And then we'd like to ask you about some of your other research opportunities.
We were talking specifically, I think, about her getting bit by a baby.
a baby gibbon.
That doesn't happen every day now, does it?
Specifically, this was a baby lesser ape. No one can tell that story. If you were hanging around Neverland, you might have gotten bit by Bubbles, which is a great ape, but no one gets bit by a lesser. What an obscure thing to get bitten by.
Well, I will tell you, they have incredibly long canines, even at a young age. Mm-hmm. And when I was bit, we were able to see how many teeth that were left by the imprints. And being that we're scientists, we actually measured the circumference and monitored the dentition or the teeth development based on the marks on my arm.
Look at that. You took a mold or you guys just took imaging?
We took imaging.
I love it.
And then I bruised.
Oh.
That's too bad. Did you take one for the team? Because this is kind of starting to sound like you want sympathy, but it sounds like you did it on purpose.
No, I didn't do it on purpose, but I am grateful that I had the ability to collect some scientific evidence. So I wouldn't recommend that you put your arm in front of a gibbon under any circumstances. They're about 2 to 3 times stronger than adult male. You should not be touching them. They're not pets at the Gibbon Center. They are absolutely wild animals. They're not trained in any way. This was just a freak accident. Mm.
And when the students attend, let's say they were to join us for one of the tours, and if they can't make it to this particular date, there are many other tours available for the public. What do you recommend is best for our students or for our non-student listeners?
So the Gibbon Center is open every weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, from generally about 10 o'clock or 9:30 until 1 p.m. At 10 o'clock, you can take a tour or you can do a self-guided tour. On the 25th, I will hopefully be leading a tour. And you'll be able to not only observe behavior, each one of the 11 cages has been hand-built by one of the individuals that rears or helps to raise them. They're fed 7 to 10 times during the day. Gibbons are up from dusk down to dawn, and you will be able to spend a lot of time hopefully hearing their sounds, their singing sounds.
And it is beautiful. I've been on many occasions and just enamored with these beautiful species, and I hope that our listeners will get a chance to join. I know you've also worked for other organizations in Los Angeles, great cultural institutions, great natural history institutions, such as you mentioned the Los Angeles Zoo and the Natural History Museum and the Page Museum, which is the La Brea Tar Pits.
Right.
Could you share a little bit about any of those experiences for our listeners who are considering field work or opportunities to grow?
Sure. I would recommend that even if you're slightly interested in anthropology, the best way to know that this is a discipline for you is to just jump in. It's very hands-on. It's very practical. It's very applied. What you learn in the classroom will then be utilized out in whatever field that you choose. So if you're interested in archaeology, for instance, there's a great archaeology certificate program here through PCC. You will be in Utah doing 2 weeks or 4 weeks worth of excavation at a Fremont site, which is roughly about 800 to 1,000 years old, and that's in Milford, Utah. At the Los Angeles Zoo, you can be a docent or a trained volunteer. You can do things as simple as preparing food. At Gibbons, they make that sound really easy, and in actuality, it is actually a very difficult process. Each of the 40-some-odd animals has its own set of vitamins. They all eat organic. They eat much better than I do. And you need to understand the extensive dietary restrictions of each of these animals.
You know what? We've talked a lot about Gibbons. We have known each other, can you believe it, for 18 years.
That's like L'chaim. Good luck. 18 is good luck.
It is good luck. This is a very auspicious year for us, I hope. We've known each other seemingly for forever. How did I strike you when I first took one of your classes? Was I awesome? You're on the spot now. Everyone's going to hear this.
So I'll share the story. Mark was quite young when he started college. What, 12, 13?
No, I was 14.
Oh, 14.
Oh, 14.
Okay, he's much older.
Huge difference.
So he started Cal State LA at 14. He bops into the classroom. He sits down as though he owns the classroom. And you jumped in asking questions. You were immediately involved. Never concerned about your age or never concerned about how others appeared to you. I remember when you turned 16 and you were getting your driver's license, we all celebrated.
That's so funny.
I can so picture that. In my mind's eye, I'm conjuring visions of a very young Professor Gordon and a very academic.
Do your visions look better than the one that you see in person right now?
Oh, you're a very handsome Professor Gordon, if that's the comment you're looking for.
But
I'm sure you were then,
I'm always
too.
Fishing.
Alexis, let me see if my memory is real, is any good. I believe when you took Anthro 2 with me, cultural anthropology, we went on a field trip because I believe all anthropologists need to be involved with community service. And we did a walk for the homeless. Is that correct?
We did. And you have an excellent memory. We walked, in fact, through Skid Row and marched on the streets of downtown LA. And it was my first dose of activism. And you bring that up because I still talk about that in class, and I tell my students the very same thing. I say, you've got to get interested in something, and I hope this class will give you some ideas and direction. And when they come into class the first day, they probably think, who is this crazy woman who says, go out and march, go out and get involved, go up and take up a cause? And in fact, I learned that truly from you and from that class. And being a member of our community as anthropologists, trying to walk that very fine line between being part of that community and on the outside is so vital. It's so critical. So,
and it's something you can only learn by doing.
That's right.
We do our best to explain it in the classroom, but you need to be involved with your community. And anthropologists, I believe, really teach their students to be good humans.
The fact of the matter is that there are a lot of, I won't sugarcoat it, downsides to teaching. But there are some just really great things also. You've literally changed our lives in that you got us to do what it is that you do. And I know I'm not just speaking for myself when I say that I just love the way you did stuff. You didn't take the humanity out of the science. You combined all of the stuff that anthropology is known for. I still remember a story, and I'm going to be totally embarrassed if I screw this up, but you'll tell me if this is right. Did you once tell us about how you had a class where your professor made you describe how a hamburger was made and how all of the different parts of a hamburger came from their various sources and got pieced together?
I did.
That's an 18-year-old story that has not been lost because the stuff you've said, you've remembered.
It was a bio class, and you had to explain where every object on that hamburger originated and how the parts are all interrelated. So you learned about symbiotic relationships. I hope you learned something more than this. But what's most important what's most important is that both of you were both honors to have in the classroom, honors to have as colleagues, and I couldn't be more proud of both of you.
Well, we appreciate it. Let me ask you something that you're going to not want me to ask you because, you know, but I have to.
Okay.
It's about Kroeber. Do you have any opinions whatsoever about Kroeber? Because I think that we need to explain at least for 30 seconds or until someone takes a cane and pulls us out of here.
Right. We do.
What is this super organic? I know we all know this. This is an article. The name of the show came from an article that's almost 100 years old, something that no one reads anymore but that they should. It was written in 1917 and by a guy named Kroeber. Who founded the department or was one of the founders of the Department of Anthropology at UC Berkeley, was very prodigious. He got his PhD in 1901, the first PhD awarded in anthropology at Columbia from Franz Boas, who was the top guy in all of cultural anthropology. So this guy is really, really, really important. And yet in this article called The Super Organic, he never says what is super organic about anything. He kind of alludes to it. I'm banging on the desk here. I'm sure that sounds great over the air. Does it mean anything to you, or is it something that should just be lost because it's old?
No, I don't think it should be lost. And Kroeber's not the only one that talked about organic individuals or organic needs. We see that happening in other disciplines as well. But I try to look at it within the context in which it was written and then bring it up to date. And I look at the organic form of individuals today and what they need and how they interact within their environment. Anthropology is all about interaction. And I think the organic gives you a way of seeing how different individuals will require or need or obtain information, how we as individuals will interact with one another politically, economically. It didn't really explain all of that, but it shows that everything is connected. So why don't you tell me about your definition?
So for super organic, I read this article, and I should tell you, I read it when I was a student, and I read it again as faculty, and I could see why our students struggle. And Dr. Aronson brings up a very good point, which is it is an antiquated text. This man, Dr. Alfred Kroeber, single-handedly wrote 500 articles. I can't even think of more prolific anthropologist other than Boas. And so perhaps some of his ideas were a bit convoluted. But one thing, not convoluted, sorry if any descendants of Kroeber's family are listening, not convoluted, they're very complex and very nuanced, but super organic as a theme persists today, and the reason we selected it for our show is to show that culture is so instrumental and so valuable. It's above organic.
It's special. Anything can be alive, right? You know, a mollusk can be alive, but not everything can have this special stuff that no one can perfectly define, that there are a million definitions of, and no one hits the nail exactly on the head, that we call culture. And that's what is super organic. All of this stuff above, you know, our basic needs for survival and our basic construction of cells, I think.
But you have to understand what's happening in the self to understand what's above. So it's almost like a cloud above us that's resting on our shoulders, but it's connected to who we are. And that's the easiest way that I think of it. You also have to understand when Kroeber was doing his research, he was describing. He was quite descriptive, and that's where you get the 500 articles, some that are very, very long. But he wasn't necessarily interpreting, and that's what the three of us do today. So it was a different way of understanding behavior.
That's very nicely put. And that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for joining us on the Super O Show with Professors Mark Joshua Gordon and Alexis Altunian, where we find culture everywhere and in everything. With every mixtape comes careful chosen songs and a story. Join host Gabriel Perez for the mixtape as he invites student musicians from PCC to share theirs. Mixtape on Lancer Radio, Fridays at 6 p.m. LancerRadio.org.
Like all great things, our time together must come to an end. Anthropology is a field of study that's as broad or as narrow in scope as the human mind that ponders its wonders. Anthropology teaches us that although every group of people is unique, we're all fundamentally the same. Tune in next week for more Super O Show with Professors Mark Joshua Gordon and Alexis Altunian, where we find culture everywhere and in everything. Right here on the Lancer Radio Network, Pasadena Campus Sounds, on www.lancerradio.org.